Well, we have proposed profit sharing for 1958 because we believe this is the most effective way to expand purchasing power. And purchasing power is the key to the economic future of the American economy. Our economy is in trouble. There's a serious and growing imbalance between expanding productive power and lagging purchasing power. And we believe that workers, consumers, and farmers are being shortchanged and that they are not getting their fair share of the fruits of our developing technology.
Well,
the giant corporations are getting more than their share. They're getting a disproportionately large share, and because they are keeping more than their proper share, this is creating this serious imbalance out of which unemployment and recession is developed. It's a very simple idea. What we're saying, in effect, to the General Motors Corporation, to Ford, to Chrysler, to other corporations, we have devised a two-pronged approach to collective bargaining in 1958. We want a minimum economic demand, which we know can be paid out of the increased productivity measured by the level of productivity in the total economy. That's the way of measuring the economic progress that every worker is entitled to make based upon the growth of our economy, based upon the progress in our technology. Now we say we will defer the balance of our equity until the end of the year so that realizing the balance of our equity will not create inflationary pressures on the price structure. The prices will have been paid, the profits will have been made, and at that point we say that workers, consumers, and stockholders should share in getting their equity out of the fruits of advancing technology. Now, this is not only a matter of economic justice. This is a matter of economic necessity, because our free economy will not work unless we maintain an expanding and dynamic balance between higher productive power balanced by higher purchasing power. And when one gets out of joint with the other, we get in trouble. If we formulate a set of economic demands based upon the unfavorable economic position of some small company, then we turn over the gravy train to the General Motors Corporation, and workers and consumers are denied the equity that they have out of the greater productivity and the greater efficiency of the General Motors Company, because they are able to employ the most advanced technology in terms of automation, etc. On the other hand, if we have a uniform demand based upon the economics of GM, we then inflict hardship upon the small company. And we say that if a big company, because of the volume of production, because of the advanced technology they employ, if they make bigger profits, then why shouldn't the worker and the consumer share in those greater profits? The prices in the automotive industry have nothing to do with the law of supply and demand. The Ford Motor Company, on their 57 models, they set the price of their cars. GM set their price a little higher. Ford responded by making a further adjustment. We have an administered price structure that has nothing to do with the law of supply and demand. That's been the trouble with America. We have gotten into trouble under a most unusual economic situation. Inflation is supposed to be the result of where the demand for goods and services exceeds the available supply of goods. We've had inflation under circumstances where we had much greater productive capacity than we had consumers available, because we had rigged inflation, rigged by powerful corporations who exercise monopoly control of basic industries and who can arbitrarily set aside the law of supply and demand and fix the price. And what we're saying is that the consumers of America and the wage earners have both been shortchanged, and the only way we can get them their equity is to get it out of profits after profits have been made. And what we propose to do is to share the fruits of our advancing technology so that we can share economic abundance. In 1955, our industry was operating roughly at 95% of capacity. Today, it's operating at 60%. The steel industry, less than 60%. The home appliance industry, less than 60%. The tax base that we need to finance a stronger defense posture, to overcome our deficits in education and science, to also meet the Soviet Union's offensive on the economic and political front, what we need is a full employment, full production economy in which we are getting out of the American economy its maximum potential output, and then spread the tax base on that broader economic base. I believe, to begin with, that free labor and free management have a great deal more in common than they have in conflict. And I believe that freedom is an indivisible value, that you can't have free labor without free management, and that we both need to learn to work and cooperate together to preserve our free society in a free world. Now, we reject the whole concept of Marxism and the class struggle, because that philosophy was based essentially upon the struggle to divide up economic scarcity. We believe that free men, free labor, free management, working together within free government in a free economic system, have the glorious opportunity of cooperating in the creating and the sharing of economic abundance. We believe that this is the first time in the history of human civilization that we can solve man's economic and material needs of food and clothing, and we can facilitate the growth of every human being as a social being, as a cultural being, as a spiritual being.